Hello, this is Guy Kawasaki. The title of this talk is The Art of Pitching. It is based on the third chapter of my book, The Art of the Start. First of all, forget the old Latin saying, I think, therefore, I am. For entrepreneurs, the phrase is really, I pitch, therefore, I am. Pitching isn't only for raising money, it's for reaching agreement. Agreement can yield many outcomes: management buy-in, closing a sale, securing a partnership, recruiting an employee, or getting an investment. I'm an evangelist for better pitching because I suffer from a medical condition called tinnitus. This involves a constant ringing in my right ear. I've been to many specialists, and the bottom line is that no one knows what causes it, much less how to cure it. I've been told at various times to reduce my intake of salt, fat chance for a Japanese American who loves miso soup and sushi, consume less chocolate, wine, and cheese, fat chance for an American Japanese living in California, and worry less and sleep more, fat chance for a CEO of a company in Silicon Valley. I have another explanation for my medical mystery. The ringing is caused by listening to thousands of lousy pitches. The gist of pitching is to get off to a fast start, explaining the relevance of what you do, staying at a high level, listening to audience reaction, and then pitching over and over again until you get it right. In this chapter, you'll learn how to pitch your organization and product or service in a shorter, simpler, and better way. First, explain yourself in the first minute. I've never sat through a pitch by an entrepreneur, an employee, or not-for-profit and thought, I wish the speaker had spent the first 15 minutes explaining his or her life story. While you're warming up, the audience is wondering, what does this company or not-for-profit or school or church do? This knowledge is the anchor, foundation, or beachhead, whatever metaphor you want to use, that your audience needs for the pitch to go well. Do everybody a favor. Answer the question in the first minute. Once the audience has learned what you do, then they can listen to everything else with a more focused perspective. Unfortunately, many entrepreneurs believe they should explain their life story, gradually progressing to why they started the organization. From this tale, the audience is supposed to induce what business the organization is in and what the product or service does. Guess again. It works in the opposite way. First explain what you do, and then the audience can deduce, or at least comprehend, the particulars of your business. Clear the air at the start of your pitch, and don't let anyone have to guess what you do. Make it short and sweet. For example, we sell software. We sell hardware. We teach underprivileged kids. We save souls. We prevent child abuse. Second, answer the little man. A friend of mine named Bill Jones once told me that when he started his career at IBM, the company trained him to imagine there was a little man sitting on his shoulder during his pitches. Every time Bill said something, the little man would whisper to him, "So what?" Every entrepreneur should carry this little man on their shoulder and listen to him. Unfortunately, either the little man is missing or entrepreneurs have tinnitus like me. Most entrepreneurs think that the significance of what they're saying is self-evident, if not shocking and awe-inspiring. Put the little man on your shoulder. Every time you say something, imagine him asking his question. After you answer it, then follow with the two most powerful words in a pitch, for instance, and then discuss a real-world use or scenario of a feature of your product or service. For example, we use digital signal processing in our hearing aids. So what? Our product increases the clarity of sound. For instance, if you're in a cocktail party with many conversations going on around you, you'll be able to hear what the people are saying to you. We provide 128-bit encryption in a portable device. So what? It's harder than hell to break into our system. For instance, if you're in a hotel room and want to have a secure telephone conversation with your headquarters, our device makes this possible. Ms. Big Name Celebrity is on our advisory board. So what? What we're doing is interesting enough to attract top talent. For instance, she has already opened doors for us in her industry. Nothing in a pitch is more powerful than combining an answer to so what with for instance. So answer the little man and follow up with an example of the use of your product or service. Third, know your audience. Novice entrepreneurs believe that the foundation of a great pitch is the ability to spontaneously generate bull secretion. They're wrong. The foundation of a great pitch is the research that you do before the meeting starts. First, learn what's important to the audience. You can get this information from your sponsor for the meeting by asking these questions in advance. What are the three most important things you would like to learn about our organization? What attracted you to our idea and convinced you to give us an opportunity to meet? Are there any special issues, questions, or landmines I should be prepared for the meeting? How old will the oldest person in the meeting be? You'll see why this is important soon. Next, visit the organization's website. Use Google searches, read reports, and talk to your industry contacts to gather core information about the audience. These are some areas to investigate. Organization background. What is the organization's mission statement? What is the organization's mantra? What is the organization's genesis? Who funded it? Who founded it? Executives and management. Who works there? What organizations did they work for in their previous positions? Where did they go to school? What boards and other organizations do they work with now? Current efforts. Questions in this area will vary according to the type of organization you're starting and what you're trying to obtain. Generally, you need to determine exactly what the organization is doing and what its directions are. Then, brainstorm with your team. You're looking for connections, hooks, and angles to make the pitch powerful and meaningful. The possibilities are many, but figuring them out while you're in front of the audience is difficult to do. The key is to conduct this research and brainstorming in advance and under little pressure. Fourth, follow what I call the 10-20-30 rule. I've never heard a pitch that was too short. A pitch can't be too short because a good one will motivate listeners to ask questions that extend it. Here is a good guideline for the content, length, and font of a good pitch. 10 slides, 20 minutes long, using 30-point text. First, 10 slides. You should be so lucky that your audience remembers one thing about your pitch, exactly what your organization does. Right there, your pitch would be better than 90% of the competition's. In a pitch, you want to communicate enough, not everything, to enable people to remember what your organization does. Enough means enough to get you to the next step, whatever the next step may be. For funding, the next step is meeting with more partners in the firm. For a sale, the next step is a test installation or small purchase. For partnering, the next step is meeting with more people within the organization. Understand this. The purpose of a pitch is to stimulate interest, not close a deal. Thus, the recommended number of slides for a pitch is small, 10 or so. This seemingly impossibly low number forces you to concentrate on the absolute essentials. You can add a few more, but you should never exceed 20 slides. The fewer slides you need, the more compelling your idea. Here's what should be in those 10 slides. First, the title slide. Put your organization name, your name, title, and contact information. This is where you explain what your organization does while the audience is quickly looking at the title slide. This is where you say, we sell software, we sell hardware, we are a school, we are a church, we protect the environment. Cut to the chase. Next slide, the problem slide. Describe the pain you're alleviating. The goal is to get everyone nodding and buying in. Avoid looking like a solution searching for a problem. Minimize or eliminate citations of consulting studies about the future size of your market. Solution. Explain how you alleviate this pain and the meaning that you make. Ensure that the audience clearly understands what you sell and your value proposition. This is not the place for an in-depth technical explanation. Provide just the gist of how you fix the pain. For example, we are a discount travel website. We have written software that searches all the other travel sites and collates their price quotes into one report. The fourth slide is the business model slide. Explain how you make money, who pays you, your channels of distribution, and your gross margin. Generally, a unique, untested business model is a scary proposition. If you truly have a revolutionary business model, explain it in terms of familiar ones. The fifth slide contains your underlying magic. Describe the technology, secret sauce, or magic behind your product or service. The less text and the more diagrams, schematics, and flowcharts on this slide, the better. The sixth slide is marketing and sales. Explain how you're going to reach your customer and your marketing leverage points. Convince the audience that you have an effective go-to-market strategy that won't break the bank. The seventh slide deals with competition. Provide a complete view of the competitive landscape. Too much is better than too little. Never dismiss your competition. Customers, investors, employees, everyone wants to hear why you're good, not why the competition is bad. The A slide is the management team. Describe the key players of your management team, board of directors, and board of advisors, as well as your major investors. Don't be afraid to show up with less than a perfect team. All startups have holes in their team. What's truly important is whether you understand that there are holes and are willing to fix them. The ninth slide, financial projections and key metrics. Provide a five-year forecast containing not only dollars, but also key metrics such as the number of customers and the conversion rate. Do a bottom-up forecast. Take into account long sales cycles and seasonality. Making people understand the underlying assumptions of your forecast is more important than the numbers you've fabricated. The 10th slide. Here you cover current status, accomplishments to date, the timeline, the use of funds. Explain the current status of what you're doing, what the near future looks like, and how you use the money you're trying to raise. Share the details of your positive momentum and traction, then use this slide to close with a bias toward action. At the back of your 10 slides, you can keep a few that go into greater detail about your technology, marketing, customers, or other key strategies. If you're asked for a more in-depth explanation, then it's nice to have these done in advance. However, they usually don't belong in the set of 10 most important slides. 20 minutes. Most meetings are set for an hour. However, you should be able to give your pitch in 20 minutes. There are two reasons for this. First, you may not get an hour if the previous meeting is running late. Second, you want ample time for discussion. Whether it's 20 minutes of presentation and then 40 minutes of discussion, or slide, discussion, slide, discussion, slide, discussion, isn't critical. But there's no scenario under which you can use 45 slides in a one-hour meeting unless the meeting is going poorly. I know you're probably thinking, guys referring to the hoi polloi, great unwashed masses, and bozos. They should use only 10 slides in 20 minutes, but not us. We have curve-jumping, paradigm-shifting, first-moving, patent-pending technology. I am referring to you. I don't care if you sell dog food, permanent life, nanoparticles, optical components, or the cure for cancer. 10 slides in 20 minutes is all you get. 30-point font. This recommendation started off for entrepreneurs pitching venture capitalists, but applies to any meeting in which you pitch your organization using a projector. Any venture capitalist that survived the dot-com carnage is probably over 40 and has deteriorating vision. A good rule of thumb for font size is to divide the oldest investor's age by 2 and use that font size. Seriously, if you have to use a small font, you're putting too much detail on the slide. Each slide should portray one primary point. All the text and bullets should support this point. Use slides to lead, not read. They should paraphrase and enhance what's coming out of your mouth because people can read faster than you talk. If you put too much detail on the slide, the audience will read ahead of you and not listen to what you're saying. Fifth, set the stage. If there's no projector when you show up for a meeting, it's your fault. If your laptop and the projector don't work together, it's your fault. If the ball blows out in the middle of your pitch, it's your fault. If you start slow, disorganized, and disheveled, it's your fault. It's almost impossible to recover from a bad start, so get there early and set the stage. Bring your own projector. Bring 2 laptops loaded up with your presentation. Bring your presentation on one of those USB-based flash drive memory products, like the ones from SanDisk. Bring printouts of your presentation in case all hell breaks loose and nothing works. When you start your pitch, the first words out of your mouth should be, "How much of your time may I have?" This question shows that you respect the value of the audience's time by not running over your limit. What are the 3 most important things I can communicate to you? You should have gotten this in advance, but it doesn't hurt to clarify this again. May I quickly go through my PowerPoint presentation and handle questions at the end? However, please feel free to interrupt me if you need to. If you set the stage so that everyone has the same expectations, you're way ahead of the game. Sixth, let one person do the talking. Entrepreneurs have it stuck in their head that investors, customers, and partners want to work with teams, and teams show, guess what? Teamwork. Using this line of reasoning, they believe that 4 or 5 people from their organization should attend the meeting, and they should each have a role in the pitch because it shows how well the team works. This logic is terrific for a school play. Every kid gets a talking role. Parents and grandparents get their photo opportunities. Everyone participates. Life is good, fair, and equitable. However, a pitch is not a school play. In a pitch, the CEO should do 80% of the talking. The rest of the team, and there should probably be no more than two others, can present the one or two slides pertaining to their specific area of expertise. They can also provide detailed answers if any questions arise. However, if the CEO can't handle most of the pitch by himself or herself, he or she should practice until he or she can, or you should get a new CEO. Other team members trying to rescue the CEO when the audience pushes back on something is dangerous. For example, suppose someone wants to debate a multiple-tier distribution system for selling products. A team member, with all good intention, asserts, "I think you're right. I've thought for a long time that we should sell only directly to the customer. It's just that the CEO didn't agree with me." Bad move. The only right answer is for the CEO to say, "You've brought up a good point. Can we follow up with you on that later?" Seventh, catalyze fantasy. Literally every entrepreneur shows up at Garage with a pitch that has three or four slides that, quote, proves the size of the market. Usually the slide contains a quote from a well-known consulting firm like Gartner, IDG, or the Yankee Group. It states that the size of the shrimp farming software market will be $50 billion in the next 4 years. Funny thing about these slides, supposedly every market is going to be $50 billion. The forecast is always 4 or 5 years in the future. This time horizon is short enough to make the forecast believable, but long enough so that it is not yet proven. No one in the room, even the entrepreneur, believes the numbers or thinks they are particularly relevant. There are two solutions to this problem. The first is to start with the $50 billion number and peel away the layers of the onion until you arrive at the realistic total addressable market, or TAM. TAM is the true size of what you can go after, not the totality of every nickel that's spent in something related to your product or service. For example, the TAM of a new sushi bar is not the $50 billion spent every year by Americans eating out, nor is it the $5 billion spent on ethnic food. It's the $1 million spent on Japanese food within 50 miles of your prospective location. The advantage of doing this in a pitch is that it shows you truly understand the makeup of the market and you are realistic in what segments you can address. This builds your credibility for the rest of the pitch. Quite the opposite occurs if you say that the market is $50 billion. The second solution is bolder. Forget the market research and catalyze fantasy. You do this by providing a product or service that is so obviously needed that the members of your audience could do the math in their heads. This method won't work in all cases because some markets are not that obvious, but when it does work, it is spectacular. Here's an example of how it can work. Suppose you make a product that tests the security of websites that accept textual input from visitors. Your product ensures that hackers cannot penetrate your site through these input fields. Here's how you'd build the fantasy. First, almost every website has a place to enter text. Then, there are a lot of websites. Third, every company is afraid of being hacked into. Fourth, therefore, lots of companies will need to buy this product. This line of fantasy is much more powerful than citing a study that proves the market for security software will be $50 billion in 4 years, because the audience has heard four pitches that same day with numbers just as big. And those pitches were for shrimp farming, wireless access point, nanoparticles, and graphics chips. Eighth, get to 1,000 feet and stay there. I promise that this is the only war analogy in this talk. Consider three methods to deliver lethal force. The B-1B Lancer. This is a long-range bomber for intercontinental missions that is capable of penetrating sophisticated defense systems. It can fly up to 30,000 feet above the ground. They cost about $200 million each. The Navy SEALs. They are trained for special operations in enemy territory. They provide unconventional warfare capabilities and real-time eyes on targets by striking from and returning to the sea. The A-10 Warthog. This plane was designed for close air support of troops. It is simple and rugged. Its sweet spot is flying at 1,000 feet. They cost $13 million each. If pitches were weapons, the majority are B-1B Lancers or Navy SEALs. The B-1B pitch is up in the clouds. There was a lot of hand-waving, cool PowerPoint animations, and use of terms like strategic, partnerships, alliances, first-mover advantage, and patented technology. Typically, it's delivered by an MBA with a finance or consulting background. Geeks, propeller heads, and engineers deliver the Navy SEAL pitch. They explain the subtle nuances of their technology and use a lot of acronyms that only they understand. It's clear that the people know every bit of their technology and would love to explain every bit of their technology to you. The B-1B pitch is too high because listeners want to learn specifically what the business does and why it will succeed. Big words don't accomplish this. The Navy SEAL pitch is too low because it focuses on the bits, bytes, and nits, but a pitch isn't about microscopic due diligence. The right analogy for pitching your business is neither the B-1B Lancer at 30,000 feet or Navy SEALs at 0 feet. It's the A-10 Warthog at 1,000 feet. Like this airplane, your pitch doesn't have to be pretty. It just needs to be effective, above the ground, but still tactical. Pitch at the 1,000-foot level. You're not above the clouds where the air is thin, but you're not on the ground with the knife in your teeth either. Provide enough detail to prove you can deliver and enough aerial view to prove you have a vision. Ninth, shut up, take notes, summarize, regurgitate, and follow up. I once accompanied a startup CEO and COO on a pitch to a venture capitalist. A few days after the pitch, I met with the venture capitalist alone. When the topic came up about management, with a capital M, all he said was, "I noticed the CEO did a lot of talking, but the COO was sitting there taking notes. The CEO didn't write down a thing. I think the COO is a quality guy." The point here is that shutting up, taking notes, or God help you, actually listening for ways to improve is a good thing to do in a pitch. The smallest actions like this create a big impression. The visible act of taking notes says, "I think you're smart. You're saying something worth writing down. I'm willing and anxious to learn. And I'm conscientious." Taking notes provides these benefits plus the value of the information that you're recording. Can't get much better than this. Also, at the end of the meeting, you can make a great impression by summarizing what you heard and playing it back in order to make sure you got the correct information. You can make an even greater impression by following through within a day on all the promises that you made during the pitch. 10th, rewrite your pitch from scratch. This is a difficult recommendation for people to accept, but first allow me to briefly diverge and tell you about cars in the Philippines. Because of import duties, restrictions on trade, and the low cost of labor, fixing cars here is much more attractive than buying new cars. Thus, many cars are rebuilt and patched with cannibalized parts from other cars, as well as handmade components. For example, it's common to see a Jeep with a Chevrolet engine. Unfortunately, after a while, many pitches start looking like these cars. They started as one model, but their owners kept editing and patching them after each meeting to answer the most recent questions and objections. This goes on for weeks, each meeting producing more edits, fixes, and patches until it is difficult to recognize the pitch at all, and it touches every subject, but confuses the overall message. Here's my recommendation. After 10 or so pitches, throw away your presentation. Start with a clean slate and write the text from scratch. Let this version 2 reflect the gestalt of what you've learned, but not be a patchwork quilt. 11th, pitch constantly. Familiarity breeds content. When you are totally familiar and comfortable with your pitch, you'll be able to give it best. 25 times is what it takes for most people to reach this point. All these pitches don't have to be to your intended audience. Your co-founders, employees, relatives, friends, even your dog are fine as an audience. Forget the theory of rising to the occasion when you actually give the pitch. If you're lousy in practice, you'll be lousy in a pitch. So get going, because if there's anything worse than getting tinnitus, it's causing tinnitus. Because PowerPoint is such a central focus of many pitches, here is a mini chapter called The Art of PowerPointing. PowerPoint is a Swiss Army knife for entrepreneurs. It started off as a tool and has become an end in itself, cluttering the effectiveness of most pitches. Before you cut yourself, heed this advice about the art of using PowerPoint as a means to an end, not the end itself. First, use a dark background. A dark background communicates seriousness and substance. A white or light background looks cheap and amateurish. Also, staring at a harsh white presentation for 40 minutes gets tiring. Think about this. Have you ever seen movie credits that use black text on a white background? Second, add your logo to the master page. Every presentation is a chance to build brand awareness, so get your logo out there. Third, use common sans-serif fonts. A presentation is not the place to show that you've accumulated the world's greatest collection of fonts. Use common fonts because someday you may present using a computer with different fonts than your collection. Also use sans-serif fonts because they are much easier to read than the delicate serif font you love. Fourth, animate your body, not your slides. PowerPoint has over 60 ways to animate text and graphics. This is about 59 too many. Many entrepreneurs use animations and transitions between slides to jazz up their presentations. But do you really think that a faded fly-in from the bottom left is going to make your presentation better? Do yourself a favor. Don't use fancy animations. Use your body, not PowerPoint, to communicate expressiveness, emotion, and enthusiasm. Generally speaking, if you think something is a cool effect, cut it. Fifth, build bullets. Most entrepreneurs don't use bullets in PowerPoint. They display and read big blocks of long text. That's a mistake. Use bullets instead. Short bursts of text that capture the main point. Even when entrepreneurs do use bullets, they put them all up at once. That's also a mistake. Build your bullets. Click, bullet one, explain. Click, bullet two, explain. Click, bullet three, explain. This is the only time you should use animation, and I recommend using the very simple appear animation at that. Sixth, use only one level of bullets. Bullets with bullets means you're trying to communicate too much information on a slide, or your thinking is fuzzy. Each slide should communicate one point with bullets to support that point. If you observe the 30-point font rule, it would be hard to have bullets with bullets anyway. Seventh, add diagrams and graphs. Better a bullet than a block of text, but better a diagram or graph than a bullet. Use diagrams to explain how your business works. Use graphs to explain trends and numerical results. And build your diagrams and pictures by bringing in these elements with clicks, just like you would build bullets. Eighth, make printable slides. There is a cautionary aspect to diagrams and graphics. Sometimes these objects build upon and cover previous ones. That's okay when you're doing the presentation live, but make sure your slides work when you print them too. Now I'd like to provide an FAQ, frequently avoided questions, about pitching. First question, how do I make my pitch memorable? The problem is not that pitches are boring. In a vacuum, many are quite exciting. First mover advantage, patented technology, $50 billion market, proven teams of highly motivated geniuses. The problem is that pitches sound alike because many make the same claims. You can make your pitch memorable by having it short, 10 slides, 20 minutes, with a compelling story of how you solve real pain. Less than 1% of pitches really do this. To help you develop a memorable pitch, imagine that your audience is at the end of a long day of boring meetings. Everyone is barely awake, much less attentive, and people just want to go home. More often than not, this is what you'll walk into, so be prepared for it. Question, should I send my presentation in advance to the attendees? I don't think so. A good presentation has snippets of text in a big font, so recipients will find it difficult to comprehend without your riveting oral presentation. I advise you not to send it in advance. Question, but then should I hand out my presentation at the start of the meeting? Again, I don't think so. My theory is that if you do that at the beginning, people will skip ahead because they can read faster than you can talk. However, this makes it more difficult for the audience to take notes. An alternate theory is that you hand out the presentation at the start of the meeting, but you ask people not to skip ahead. I would like to recommend two books to help your pitching. First is a book called Public Speaking, As Listeners Like It by Richard Borden. It was published by Harper & Brothers in 1935. Might be hard to find this book, but check Amazon. The next book is called Inevitable Illusions, How Mistakes of Reason Rule Our Mind. It was published by John Wiley & Sons in 1994. The author is Massimo Piattelli Palmerini. I hope you've enjoyed this recording. For more information about starting something, please refer to my book, The Art of the Start, and my other MP3 recordings. In particular, you would probably be interested in my MP3 recording called The Art of Raising Capital. Information about this recording and my book are available at www.artofthestart.com. Thank you very much.